Chapter 11. Sons of Sabazius.
"I'm pleased to see you in such good spirits, Hereditary Governor,"
Pike said, as the guard showed her and Sirius into the Governor's presence.
"Not every man would be cheering the dissolution of his own government."
"It's no more than they deserve, Lady Golconda."
Pandion clapped his skinny hands in pleasure.
"And truth be told, I've been dreaming of doing something similar for years now. Decades, even."
He turned.
"This calls for a drink. Will you join me?"
They had disbanded the patricians that morning. Pandion had absented himself from the assembly, leaving the matter to his new regent. Pike smiled, remembering the explosion of noise that had greeted Fulgrim's proclamation. She'd thought the assembled noblemen were going to riot until the Primarch had drawn his sword and seated himself on Pandion's pneumatic throne, in a signal few could misinterpret. After that, the gubernatorial guard had quickly ushered the stunned members of the assembly out. Discreet warnings had already been passed along the usual channels, ahead of the wave of arrest warrants Pandion had gleefully issued at Fulgrim's request. Most, but not all, of the patricians and their families would slip the net. Enough of them would be caught to make the rest feel lucky. Pandion poured her a glass, still chattering.
"A splendid strategy. They'll have no choice but to make common cause, and then you'll have them."
"So Lord Fulgrim assures me."
"Yes. Where is he, by the way? I expected him to bring me the news himself."
Pandion glanced sidelong at Sirius.
"And why is he here?"
"Protection," Sirius said. His hand dropped to the hilt of his sword. Pandion paled.
"I see. What now?"
"Your family will be evacuated today," Pike said.
Pandion nodded eagerly.
"Oh, good, good. I'll let them know we're leaving."
"They're leaving. You're not."
Pandion froze.
"What?"
"You're staying, in order to provide some little inspiration to your soldiers, like a governor ought, and to draw the enemy in. Your symbolic value goes both ways."
Pandion swallowed. He was sweating now.
"Chancellor Corinth,"
he began. Pike cut him off with a gesture.
"Corinth is an admirable man, but he is not the hereditary governor. He is not Pandion the Fourth, the heir to a legacy stretching back to this world's founding."
She smiled.
"If you leave, this whole house of cards comes crashing down. And we can't have that."
You can't be serious," he protested.
"You'll be evacuated, but only after the trap has been sprung."
"I'm bait, you mean," Pandion snarled. "They won't attack unless they know I'm within reach, and my throne with me."
Pike shrugged.
"If that's how you wish to see it."
"And how else should I see it?"
"You are a necessary element in a plan to impose a working peace on a world which has been on the cusp of war for far too long."
Pandion snorted in disgust.
"This is intolerable. I agreed to compliance in order to save my throne, not gamble it on a throw of the dice."
"Life is a gamble. It's why I drink."
Pike went to the table and refilled her glass.
"Care to join me?"
Pandion rubbed his face.
"Oh, yes, why not? I suppose you and Fraser are going as well?"
"No. Lord Commander Fraser, with your permission, will take over the Continental Army. He is eager to see if he can instill something approaching martial discipline in your troops. As for myself, I'll stay here and help you kill this bottle, if you like, as well as any others you might have lying about."
Pandion gave her a crooked smile.
"Very well. And what of Lord Fulgrim and his warriors?"
Pike gestured to Sirius.
"Sirius will remain here to entertain us. Won't you, Sirius?"
The Space Marine nodded. Pandion eyed him for a moment, and then turned back to Pike as she continued.
"Fulgrim has ordered Flavius Alkanex and Narvo Quinn, both experienced line troops, to aid Fraser in seeing to the city's defence. Abdomon and the others will be deployed as the situation warrants."
"And that means what, exactly?"
Pandion asked, before gulping a long swallow of wine. Pike raised her glass and knocked back the contents in one swallow. She smiled. Abdomon moved, almost gently. His sword hummed out in a wide arc. Red sprayed across the wall of the north barracks. A headless body toppled. The rest of the renegade officers opened up, pistols snarling, a threadony of protest. There were 10, well, 9 now, of them, meeting in secret. All junior officers, all with strong family ties to various members of the patricians. All with their own men loyal to them. Enough to cause a problem in the event the city came under attack, which it almost certainly would, and which meant that they needed to be removed from the equation. The meeting hall was a wide square space, decorated with trophies of past glories. Tattered banners over a century old hung from the ceiling rafters, and bits of armour pockmarked by bullet holes were displayed on the walls. North Barracks was home to the 23rd Keelson Lancers, a storied regiment with a history of dynamic cavalry charges and influential alumni. They'd fought raiders in the western provinces and mutants in the Glass Waste, but they'd never fought anything like a warrior of the 3rd Legion. His sword swept out, removing a hand at the wrist. The wounded man sagged back, screaming. The others scrambled back, trying to put as much distance as possible between themselves and the nightmare in amethyst and gold before them. The fear on their faces was familiar. He'd seen it before, too many times. The slow, sick terror of one who realizes that despite all of their skills, their courage, nothing they did would bring victory. When faced with the transhuman, the merely human, could only flee or die. He let the sword rise, following its weight. Another scream cut short, another weapon silenced, another life subtracted. Battlefield mathematics. Outside the barracks, Abdomon could hear the boom of bolter fire, as Alkanex and Quinn saw to anyone attempting to interfere. There would be no mercy there. Alkanex would kill them too quickly, and Quinn didn't understand the meaning of the word. The entire North Barracks would be purged if necessary, though he hoped it wouldn't come to that. This was to be a lesson for those garrisoned in the city, and an example to those returning from abroad even now. One swift blow to show the rest of the army what was expected of them, and what they could expect in turn if they betrayed their oaths. Even now, Fulgrim was making a similar assault on South Barracks with Telmar and Thorn. By nightfall, the Continental Army would be firmly under their control. The Lord Commander turned, twitching blood from the blade of his sword. Impacts were registered by his armor's sensors, recorded and summarily dismissed.
In the name of Hereditary Governor Pandion IV of the Continental Government of Chalcedon Abizas, I request that you lower your weapons and stand down.
They didn't, and a few moments later, they died, one by one, until the last could only back away from the blood-stained figure looming over him, emptying the pistol extended in a shaking hand.
Sabazius lives,
he snarled, as he brought the smoking gun to his temple. It clicked, dolorously. His eyes widened.
You should keep a better count,
Abdomon said, lifting his sword. Flattened bullets crunched beneath his tread.
Fire discipline isn't just for rankers, you know. What are you?
The officer whispered.
What are you?
The future,
Abdomon said, as he drove his sword home. He looked down at the body, a brave man until the end. They were always brave. How many brave men were going to die tonight? 100? 200? He trusted Fulgrim's judgment. The plan was sound. They had chewed over the details until Abdomon could recite every one of them by heart. A perfect stratagem, given the situation. A death of a dozen cuts, each one perfectly executed and flawlessly timed. But perfection could only be judged in hindsight. Abdomon sighed and turned towards the shattered doors. He needed to stop Alkanex and Quinn before they depopulated the entire barracks. There were few enough soldiers in Nova Bacillus as it was, and they were going to need every one of them. Night found Fulgrim in the chambers of the palace set aside for his use, pondering the course he'd laid out. To say Pandion had been displeased was an understatement. The hereditary governor hadn't pressed the issue, likely grateful that his family was safe, but he was frightened. It would be for the best if he were confined to his quarters until it was time for him to leave. They couldn't afford to have Pandion issuing contradictory orders. The reflected glow of distant fires flickered across the windows of his chamber. He could hear the sounds of a city eating itself alive. Nova Basilos was in the throes of a purge such as it had not seen in a century. Political agitators had whipped the crowds into a frenzy, forcing the local arbiters to seek aid from the Continental Army, which was in the midst of its own purge. Inconvenient, but not unexpected. Pike had assured him that it would be over by morning. Her deadly popinjays were out there, weeding out the loudest of the troublemakers. There would be blood on the cobbles and bodies in the gutter come sunrise. There was something to be said for having a cadre of murderers at one's disposal. Horus would approve, he suspected. Ferris, not so much. Fulgrim smiled. Ferris wouldn't approve of much of what he was doing. Too risky. Too intricate. His brother only liked intricacy in machines. He didn't understand that the galaxy itself was a machine, and they its caretakers. Fulgrim thought perhaps that he was the only one who did. Byzas was a machine on the cusp of breakdown. It would take a bit of effort to keep it running, but a bit more to make it run perfectly. His visit to Bucephalos and the reports on the other members of the patricians had convinced him that the only way forward was to simplify things, remove the obstructions to allow the mechanism to function smoothly. That meant uprooting the nobility and dealing with whatever, whoever, was causing the disruptions. It would require a certain level of ruthlessness, but he had never shied away from the more unpleasant responsibilities of his position. Indeed, he sometimes looked forward to them. He fell into a loose guard stance, adapted from the dardi of old Europa, and let the weight of his raised blade settle along his forearms and shoulders. His panoply hung from a training mannequin, scavenged from the training field of East Barracks after his visit. His muscles felt tight from lack of use. He rotated his shoulders, letting Fireblade fall like a reaper's scythe, down, up and around, until he was once more in the guard stance. The rhythm came easily. Right foot forward, right side to the enemy, sword held to the left. An imperfect guard, as it only allowed for defence. His gaze fell upon a set of open books lying on a nearby bench. They were old, bindings cracking with neglect, pages yellow and stiff. The training manuals of the Sabazian Brotherhood, or some of them at least. Once Corinth had put him on the right track, it had been easy to find the information he sought. The Continental Government wasn't in the habit of throwing anything away, and there had been a wealth of material to explore. Reading those accounts, there was much to be admired in their writings. Like his legion, they sought to attain a perfect state of grace. But that search had led them into conflict with the Continental Government, and then into exile and oblivion. Their teachings were a mishmash of simplistic philosophical meanderings, interspersed with dueling techniques. The conflict between desire and purpose, between need and want, was a central principle, supposedly handed down by Sabazius. Life as a duel, fought between conflicting drives. Only by winning this duel could one attempt to achieve perfection in technique, and in life. Perfection was a state of balance, and the perfect society was one built on the concepts of equality and fair representation, a utopian ideal. Never to be realized, but always to be striven for. Fulgrim had little love for philosophy. It had always smacked of semi-poetic chastisement to him, common sense wrapped in cryptic mysticism. But the dueling techniques were impressively advanced, and he amused himself by experimenting with them. They were easy enough to replicate, but there was nonetheless a certain artistry to them, when taken as a whole, that he found fascinating. He shook off the dardi and sought new balance, easily replicating the diagrams in the manuals. It was all smooth movements, crafting a slow pattern of offence or defence, like a sculptor shaping clay. A fortress of controlled motion, implacable and unyielding. The rhythm was hypnotic, reducing everything to muscle memory, but allowing for minute changes in response to uneven ground and blood loss. It was no wonder the Sabazians had been feared duelists. He heard the creak of the window hinges, and the sounds of the night momentarily grew louder. He smiled. Right on time. Fulgrim turned, Fireblade whirling in his grip. A half-stroke, caught short, seared the air, but only for a moment. Then the sword was sliding upwards, reversing its course, but at a steeper angle. His feet slid across the floor, moving quickly. For a moment he was back on Chemos, and he could hear the jangling music of the sulphur as they played and clapped and cheered for him. Step, step, step. A dance of small movements, growing in purpose.
Splendid form!
Fulgrim did not pause. He turned sharply, his blade hissing out at head height, a killing blow if it landed. The speaker leapt back, startled. Fulgrim laughed.
And what are you, then? An assassin with a flair for the dramatic?
The intruder was clad in black, complete with cloak and a plain, featureless mask. A pantomime villain come to life. The secret societies on Chemos had been much the same. Masks and secret handshakes and childish ciphers. It was something innate in the human soul that exposed itself only in conspiracy. Fulgrim stepped forward, fireblade extended, closing the distance swiftly until he had the intruder all but pinned to the wall. The tip of his sword tapped against the man's throat.
Not a very good assassin, if so.
I'm not here to kill you.
The man's voice was distorted, perhaps a primitive frequency modulator built into his mask. It didn't matter. There were other methods of identification. Fulgrim prided himself on his fluency in body language. His visitor was afraid. That was good. Fear was a helpful ally in negotiations.
I'm very relieved to hear that.
Fulgrim cocked his head.
I was expecting you earlier. Could it be that other matters occupied your attentions?
He had ordered Pike to begin dismantling those intelligence networks in the city that couldn't be co-opted. The primary iterator had flung herself into the task with gusto. The local arbiters had already arrested nearly 100 men and women from all walks of life with suspected ties to one hostile faction or another. Some had likely served the Sabazian Brotherhood.
No, obviously not. What could be more important than me? You have a high opinion of yourself, Lord Phoenician.
Fulgrim laughed.
Perhaps.
He stepped back, resting Fireblade lightly on his shoulder.
If you are not here to kill me, you are here to talk.
So talk.
We have been watching you since your arrival.
I fancy you are not alone in that.
No, you have been looking for us.
The man in black gestured to the training manuals.
Digging in corners forgotten by most. Why?
Fulgrim snorted.
You have to ask. Sabazius lives. A phrase tossed off by dead men or murmured by starving peasants.
He shrugged.
Perhaps it required an outsider to see the strands for what they were, but it was easy enough.
Childishly simple, in fact.
How many times have you tried to poison me, by the way?
The intruder hesitated.
None. Poison is the tool of the unenlightened.
Ah, well, that's something. Fulgrim smiled.
To answer more simply, yes. As to why, because,
he gestured lazily,
I wish to determine your nature. Are you an obstacle to compliance, or something else?
We seek only what is best for Byzas.
Of course you do. I wager Patrician Bucephalos and his ilk would say much the same. Even poor Pandion, so frightened for his future, seeks to do what is best for Byzas.
And you?
Fulgrim paused.
Of course.
Then we should talk.
Fulgrim looked around. I was under the impression we were.
Not here.
Then where?
Tomorrow, where Sabazius first set foot upon the soil of Byzas.
Fulgrim frowned. A riddle? Really? His guest didn't reply. He went quickly to the window and slipped out into the night, cloak swirling mysteriously. Fulgrim sighed and glanced at the training manuals.
I hate riddles.